One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. Every week, a different musical introduction from Ken Knapsack. This week, we got some nice horns followed by some drums, and it really sounded like a royal was entering the court, and then errant drum beat that somebody wasn't supposed to hit.
It sounded like a little bit like a hear ye, which is okay. I'm running out of news cues. I'm going to have to look them.
Yeah, if you could just like find specific broadcasts and like master like ABC's breaking news from exactly 1978, you know, yes. That's exactly what this podcast needs is entirely precise news sounds. Anyway, I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person with the music in their mouth is Ken Knapsack.
I got the music in my mouth, in my heart, my soul.
Music all over the place. It's got to come out. We are excited, as always, to discuss the Clone Wars animated series. This week, we are diving into Season 3, Episode 3, Sphere of Influence. It is written by Katie Lucas and Stephen Melching, and it is directed by Kyle Dunleavy. I've been looking forward to getting to this one because I always remember different things about it, and then I say to myself, those things can't all be in one episode, and yet, Ken, they are.
Yeah, a lot.
It's a lot. It's a very screwy episode, a very fun episode, so let's dive into the summary, and then we can dive into talking about it. Here is the summary of Sphere of Influence. turmoil has engulfed the Galactic Republic. The Pantoran government is in debt. Hoping to resolve the matter with a blockade of deadly battleships, the Greedy Trade Federation has stopped all shipping to and from the moon of Pantora. If that sounds familiar to you, Padme Amidala agrees. Once again, the Galactic Senate is slow to resolve the matter, and the Pantoran people are approached by the separatists. If they join, the blockade will end. In a brazen attempt to break the will of the Pantoran people, bounty hunter Greedo is hired to kidnap the daughters of Pantora's political leader, Chairman Baron Papanoida. Fearing no one will respond in time, Senator Rio Chuchi and Baron Papanoida take matters into their own hands. Rio Chuchi teams up with Ahsoka Tano and rescues Chi Ekwe from a Trade Federation ship. Papanoida and his son Ion track Greedo to Jabba's palace, then Chalmun's cantina, and rescue Che Amanwe. Using both blasters and political leverage, the Pantorans successfully force Nemodian Senator Lot Dodd to end the blockade and admit that separatists continue to manipulate the business dealings of the Trade Federation. Lot Dodd saves face, but Rio and Papanoida have saved Pantora for now. Bum, bum, bum.
Wow. Yeah. A lot of syllables.
There's a lot of names. I forgot to reread this one. I prepped for this episode several days ago. And then as I was reading it, I was like, these are a lot of names that I need to be prepared to try to say correctly.
Yeah. Sometimes when we do our notes affects the pinpoint accuracy of our insights into the episodes. Like one of my notes just reads, I like, I don't know what I wrote. I just
maybe cereal. Maybe you're just writing down something else. Ken likes. Beef jerky. Ken likes. Well, let's talk about whether or not we liked Sphere of Influence. What was your big picture overall reaction? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it? Is it better or worse than beef jerky? What did you think?
I absolutely love it. I've always loved it. It's you know, Baron Papanoida is just it's fun to me. I enjoy the cameo. I enjoy the family. I enjoy the Lucas family being in and around Star Wars and many things. I have no problem with that. So I got to tell you, I forgot. I just forgot Katie Lucas has got a big writing credit on this episode, which makes perfect sense. Hey, you want to write your dad
Star and Wars? Yourself a little? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. So I love that. This episode, I had foggy memories of some of it. So I went into it going, oh, Sphere of Influence. We got some politics coming. Let me get my politics kind of gloves on, my Star Wars politics goggles. And that's there. But also, oh, yeah, I forgot. There's a shootout. There's some craziness. like you said, a lot going on. It is its own kind of episode. So I enjoyed the journey. I really did. I really enjoyed the journey.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it as well, especially watching it in this whole rewatch that we're doing of Clone Wars and kind of putting it in its place chronologically and thematically. But it is a wild one, you know? The couple things that I really liked about it is that it's another episode that is taking the time that we're really seeing as we rewatch all the Clone Wars to show that the crisis of the Clone Wars is this massive galactic crisis. And it's not just about the war. It's about all of the ramifications of the war and all the crisis and the famine and the pain that it causes on, you know, not just a galactic scale, but then on these individual planets as well. And this is yet another episode that really highlights that. So I really enjoyed that for how it tells the big picture story of the Clone Wars. And then the other thing for me is that, you know, there have been a lot of great moments where Filoni has told different stories of working with Lucas, where Filoni has described kind of wanting to treat something from Star Wars with real reverence and, you know, treat it like a museum piece of like, if we're going to show Djarik, we need to, you know, show it reverence. And Lucas being like, it's a toy, play with it. You know, don't you can't hold it too sacred or it will lose its sense of fun and whimsy and adventure. And this is an episode that is just, you know, it takes all sorts of different toys out of the toy box and throws them together. It's like, yo, Lucas and his family had done cameos. So let's make in Revenge of the Sith. So let's make those entire characters. Let's animate George Lucas and paint him blue. Let's make George Lucas a Smurf and make him the star of this episode. And while we're at it, he will be both almost Jedi-like level of wisdom and a complete badass with dual blasters. It's just like, it's not just let's turn this background character, Baron Papanoida, into a thoughtful politician. He's like this a wise ass kicking patriarch. And that's not that's not wild enough. We have to revisit the character of Greedo, Jabba's palace, and Chalmers Cantina, or whoever's cantina, whoever owns it at the time.
Right.
It's just, it's so wild. It's such an episode of Clone Wars that says a part of Star Wars is having great respect and reverence for the mythology and the themes that underpin Star Wars, which this episode I think is really respectful of. But on the other hand, it is a bunch of action figures and we're going to play with them and we don't care.
They're taking that Lucas family four pack or three pack out of the box for sure here. And I think there was a little bit with most of this episode being a little foggy in my brain. I the title, the sphere of influences of it, you know, it's political intrigue to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're like, ooh, let's roll up sleeves. And then the moral pops up, which we're going to talk about in a second. I went, oh man, yes. Oh God, there's yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot. There's a, this is fun. So, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, George in Star Wars being an actual character, this is the right way to handle it. You could have just sat him on at a desk and had him, monologue about the politics of the era, but no, it's put two blasters in.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been a story where, Baron Papanoida is directing things, like George Lucas and saying, hey, my son, Ion, you go handle things, but no, he's active, which I think is fun. And I think kind of important to illustrate some of his ideas, the ideas of Star Wars. My other note that I had made because I wanted to make sure to say it, so I just put it at the top, is Greedo's eyes are so cool.
Yes, they are.
I just love that. A whole galaxy in his eyes is just so cool.
Well, you said it made me think of Men in Black, the first one, where the galaxy's in Cat Orion's belt, and you just go in on it and like, whoa! I felt like Linda Fiorentino looking into it in the morgue. Just whoa!
Yes, you saying whoa? Like I can imagine people enjoying an edible and just staring into Greedo's eyes, whatever the Star Wars version of an edible is.
Don't move! Don't move!
All right, let's dive into the moral of the episode. The moral is a child stolen is a hope lost. What did that one mean to you? How did it hit you?
A little bit of a record scratch because you and I have, I think we have a lot of fun and we always talk about it. Sometimes these morals are, yep, that's the one. And I think this has a little bit, first again, I forgot this was the moral. So it was like politics. Oh, wait, action. Ors is also politics. Oh, God. And so I sometimes have fun taking big swings on what these morals mean. So I think there's obviously some literal nature in this. And then you're getting into kidnapping. Fun, whimsy Star Wars topic. So there's that. But I went in the direction of, is this a little bit of about a loss of innocence? This is also a loss of innocence for the galaxy. You got Padme in front of you who was a 14-year-old queen and went into that knowing and willingly, and that's how it works in Naboo, and not saying she needed to, play, video games in a room during those years. She was a powerful queen, but like she had with the blockade, she grows up and the hope that a lot of these characters have for the galaxy could easily be lost with a lot of these things. And so I took it in that kind of, a philosophical way, sir.
I thought this one was it was very interesting because it is not the kind of thing that you're gonna stitch on a throw pillow, unless you have a very odd collection of throw pillows, in my opinion. Part of it is just it's literal. This episode is about kidnapping an adult child. It on the more philosophical end, for me, it really is something that reinforces that the idea of legacy. The idea of passing on what you know to the next generation, the idea that we're not all just connected. Those of us who are literally physically living together now on the planet, in the galaxy, but that there's this lineage that connects people through time, that, big themes of that in Rise of Skywalker, right? 1,000 generations live in you, I think for me, it's a little bit of that just that sort of feeling of the idea of a child stolen is a hope lost is about how important, obviously children are important to us and we don't want them kidnapped. It's very practical, but philosophically that idea of that children are legacy and that is a good and powerful and true thing.
Yeah, to focus on it and protecting their hope for the future for themselves is an important thing.
Yeah, and like, even if the galaxy is a mess in our hands, maybe it won't be in the next generation's hands is a good one with hope lost. So let's get into the big themes, the big ideas. What did you feel like was truly at stake in this episode?
Yeah. There's I looked at some of the key moments early on and how trying to summarize it as I put politics are actions and actions are politics. There's a great moment where the what's Trade Federation guy? It's because it's not Lot Dodd. It's the other guy.
Lot Dodd is the senator. And then the character who ends up taking the fall and taking the blame. I am scrolling down to try to find the character's name. Sib Kanay.
Yeah, but it's Lot Dodd at the beginning that denies being a separatist, right?
Yes.
Ken did his notes on Sunday, people. It's been a big week. So yes, and there's he says, "Hey, just because we work as separatists doesn't mean we are them." I'm paraphrasing, of course. And that made me think of Padme, you know, with Mina Monteri, that famous episode and everything. And I'm like, okay, sure. Just because maybe you know separatists, talk to them, work with them, willing to talk
sell
to them. Sell them arms. Doesn't mean you're aligned with them. Okay, fine. I can play that game. So it will be in your actions. And so everything that the Trade Federation does proves that statement to be a lie. And it's about uncovering that, which to me goes into Baron Papinoda is this political figure. He's got his representative also. Chuchi is his political figure. But they take action. And the action represents what they believe, and what you believe does filter into your politics. Something that's been, more clear to me, an old stoic soul years and years ago, so I looked at this episode as politics in action, literally with blasters, but in action.
Yeah, no, I was right there with you. I think it is interesting that this episode is, it's not a repetition of Phantom Menace. That was just like, whoop, we ran out of ideas. It was, the same thing is happening 10 years later, and the government has got worse, not better. And so it really hits on some of these themes that I think are powerful in The Phantom Menace, but it dials them in it almost like takes that element of Phantom Menace, that theme, kind of the main theme that I think Padme is carrying, Qui-Gon up to a point too, because he's like, if there's the organizational rot in the Jedi Council that it won't train Anakin, then I'll just do it myself. And this is a lot of what's going on here too. I feel like it is organizational rot versus this strong belief that pops up from Star Wars again and again, and Lucas in particular, that individuals need to take action if the organization can't. Which, I always go back to, this is somebody who only turned to the studios because he absolutely had to, and took the punishment from the Directors Guild because they had a silly rule, with all the things that Irvin Kershner's credit. If you're not familiar with it, Google it. But this is, Lucas as a person, as a human, is somebody who has made many public statements about his own wrestling with feeling like organizations lose their spirit and become obsessive and controlling and dysfunctional. And, again and again, tries to walk away from them, and even takes it so far for himself that he personally makes a documentary called Empire of Dreams, where he criticizes himself for having to build a large organization in order to be independent.
Yeah.
So, this is not me pulling out pulling things out of air. This is some documented George Lucas adventures. And I really felt that. I think I would have felt that if it was a different character. But I really felt that since it was blue George Lucas doing these things.
You're staring into his face.
You're staring into his face, into his very beard. The way I saw this play out, a couple just bullet points of it's 10 years after The Phantom Menace. The Trade Federation, in theory, is in an even more dubious political spot because, one of their former leaders, Newt Gunray, is explicitly with the separatists. They're in the Senate saying, hey, we're still a corporation that has representation in the Senate. And now we're in the middle of a war and saying, hey, no, we're with the Republic, but come on, we're also a business. So we got to sell to both sides. So there's a lot of, you know, opinions to be had about that situation to begin with. And then we just get the straightforward story, right? That the exact same thing is going to happen. The wheels of democracy are going to move too slow to help Pandora. People are going to starve. They're possibly going to give in to fear and join the separatists, join Dooku because of this. So then we get that whole idea of that's why Baron Papanoida and his family have to take action because it's going to move too slow. And then it gets supported even more ways when we get Anakin and Ahsoka deciding to investigate the kidnapping and having this explicit conversation that they're not going to wait for the council's approval. We even got that great little exchange of like, oh yeah, we do this all the time, don't we, Snips? Yep. And it's presented as a little fun moment, but what it's saying is both the Senate and the Jedi Council are moving too slowly to actually help people. So you have individuals running off and doing it. And then we even get a touch of that when we see this Inspector Tandivo, which we will meet in a future episode, but in the broadcast order we met earlier. But the Inspector, a representation of another organization, of the actual police forces of Coruscant, Baron Papanoida doesn't trust that he is going to investigate the kidnapping itself quickly enough. And that distrust of that organization is actively what makes Baron Papanoida and his son Ion take things into their own hands. And then we even get to see this further repetition where Rio Chuchi is the senator of Pantora, has learned, I think, from her own experiences and from watching people like Padme, of like sometimes the senator just has to roll up their sleeves and get personally involved. And, you know, it's not her, she doesn't pass a bill or, you know, give a speech that makes a difference. She literally goes to the Trade Federation's ship, catches them in the act, and, you know, has to use her personal sort of adventuring to blackmail them into the Trade Federation, into removing the blockade. And it's very similar to what Padme ended up doing of like, okay, well, if the government can't act, then I have to, because my main mission is to make sure my people are safe.
Yeah, and Chuchi, put her up there with Satine and Padme, just these young, wonderful leaders in Star Wars getting down on the ground to take action when needed, right? She's not talked about enough, and I know smaller role in the series. I get that. No, I love what you're saying, but also just in State of the Galaxy stuff, even outside just the themes, just kind of that kind of fun stuff. You kind of touched on some things I love about this of, we're 10 years later territory, and this is still what's going on, and it's with great purpose. And I'm thinking of C.O. Bibble and his, it's after four trials and all this kind of stuff of just like, yeah. And this is where Palpatine's able to use all that, use those stalemates and those, snail speed, committees, and to use it to his advantage and to kind of grind the gears of democracy down to a stop. I love that that picture as well.
Yeah, and I love that we see that that's working, because it could just be that the Trade Federation, you know, Pandora's in debt and Trade Federation is blockading them, and that could just be sort of a criticism of the cruelty of galactic capitalism. But then the episode does take it that step farther and has Dooku being like, you know, I could solve this. Which really tells that story of the galaxy, you know, giving into fear, or in this case, almost giving into fear of, we're not going to be okay unless we, you know, sign a deal with the Dooku.
Deal with the Dooku.
Yeah. So I'm really, really fascinated by that Lucas often has these storytelling, and I know a lot of other people are involved with it, he's big and blue, so he's on my mind. For me, it isn't like a just all organizations are bad. It's this real concern about them being manipulated from inside and having this organizational rot, right? Because all these politicians are painted as heroes, right? Everyone from Padme to Bail to Mon Mothma to Rio Chuchi and even Satine, right? And they often have their actual victories by shaking something loose and forcing the democracy to work the way it's supposed to. So I don't ever feel like this is, for me, like a perspective that organization is bad, we should all just be on our own. You know, it's that these groups, these systems that we make that state that they are there to help all of us, can fall apart so easily, and then it's incumbent on us to push them, break the rust off, and get the machinery of working together working again.
I'd love to dive into that. That is because you're putting the right spin on it. It's not even a spin. It's the truth, and it's the positive spin on it. Since I can understand, if you were a Jedi right now, listening to this conversation, watching these episodes, you might be offended. You'd be like, hey, I'm a Jedi. I do good. And I think the stories, I'm just focusing a little bit on just the Jedi right now for the sake of this conversation, the stories, you are good. We need you. How many times do we hear that we need Jedi in Star Wars? From Lor San Tekka, working your way back. And I've always felt that's what George is saying here. Don't be cynical. Don't throw it all out. We do need these systems as they're designed. They're just not working as designed. It is like our friend Evan Peele says in Volume 2 of the Clone Wars, facing the mirror, our new favorite. What's the thing? A lot of these are stories to reflect back on you. And that's why, you know, you, Joseph Grimshaw, are the leader of the Justice for the Jedi campaign, because we're not throwing them out. We're not telling them to get the hell out of the galaxy. We need you, and we need you to do what you're supposed to do. We need, you know, I love the concept of leaders. I love having faith in leaders. I've been a leader in certain situations, and I failed tremendously because the rock can come from you, can come from inside. And sometimes you have to face that, and you have to be tough. And I think an episode like this ties greatly into the big picture of Star Wars, of it's not the organizations, it's where they are at the moment that we need to analyze, and we need to keep and never stop analyzing.
Yeah, no, I love what you're saying, and I think that's always what I'm thinking about with Justice for the Jedi, is to not necessarily apologize for them or cover up their mistakes, but that they mean well and they screw up in that good intention. You know, Yoda and Mace and even Ki-Adi-Mundi, who is almost always wrong, everything he says in the prequel films, they're all good Jedi. They're all well-intentioned, you know, characters who have given their life to it. It's just that they give into fear. They give into overthinking things and not acting when they should act, and all these things that we get to see, you know, Jedi heroes like Ahsoka and Qui-Gon kind of Pokemon.
Yeah, well, sorry. Yeah, and I love it. I've been rewatching Attack of the Clones in anticipation of something we're going to be doing soon here in the podcast. And that opening scene of Padme going, "Hey, someone tried to kill me. It ain't right." And everyone in the room is like, "No." And the Jedi can't face a Dooku. The infamous lines of he's a political idealist. All those things you're talking about.
It's like, a great delivery from Silas Carson. It's like Padme is like, here is the 100% correct answer that the rest of you will spend the entire film trying to figure out.
Yeah.
And Padme is like, no.
Yeah. And Padme is like, and I'm paid less than you. So it's a thing. It's important to watch and focus on. And if the Jedi in that room, and I think eventually they are forced to, look in the mirror and face the mirror. We need an audio clip of that. It all ties in, and I'll tell you what, it's all through this episode.
Yeah. This is great to broaden out from this episode. The other thing for me that I thought was important in this episode was that there was this theme of connection too, of when things are big and organizational, I think the empathy can kind of fade a little bit, right? It's for the Senate, it's here we go again. It's a political issue to wade through, that there's a blockade on Pandora. But what shakes it loose by all these individuals going out and taking action are a lot of personal connections, right? We see Baron Papanoida appeal to Jabba as a fellow father and makes this really personal connection. We get to see that Padme is really troubled by what's happening because she can so empathize with Rio Chuchi's exact situation. And you can imagine Rio getting inspiration to be like, okay, I got to handle this the way Padme did. And Ahsoka just explicitly says that she is determined to help and to not wait for permission from the council because she is friends with Rio. So there's like lots of different little moments that really emphasize that personal connection, that empathy that we have in personal connection matters and can be extended out to larger systems.
Yeah. Love that. Yeah. I love the Ahsoka Rio Chuchi connection friendship there.
Yeah. Too. And it's a good little sub adventure, not even sub adventure. It's half the episode. How is this episode only like 20-ish minutes, Ken? 24, 25 minutes?
No, you're right. You know, I also wanted to submit this one as a theme. I have joking. I don't have much to support it. I also think this episode's about state versus federal because Anakin goes, that's for local police.
There is definitely, speaking of one of our other favorite words, hubris, that's definitely that moment where you're like, Anakin, you know, part of his fall is that he wants more power, but he's always a little full of himself, right? Like, go back to your drinks, Jedi business, and you're going to pay for all the Jedi you killed. Like, Anakin really has an attitude that Jedi have platinum cards and other people don't. Yeah. Like, there's definitely some, like, just straight up classism from Anakin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, cops, not Jedi.
Yeah,
that's great. We've definitely expanded out and talked about how this episode speaks to other themes and morality and perspective of Star Wars. But do you have other thoughts there?
I just wanted to submit, and this maybe it boils it all down, and that's sometimes how I process things. But I looked at this episode. You've highlighted individually, I think, every character that does this, and it's standing up for what is right. And a lot of the action, talking about politics, actions, politics, but a lot of this action, just pew, 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 and the double blasters, which are cool, we're going to talk about. It's all, to me, to serve some point, to standing up for what is really right and maybe doing the, you know, that's part of the true purpose of your existence out there in this galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, a couple other big picture things. I did want to highlight the title, Sphere of Influence, right? For me, it was just kind of fascinating because Sphere of Influence can just sound like a pulp adventure serial title. Maybe not the most exciting, but right, you know, Attack the Clones, Sphere of Influence. But it just kind of demonstrates the, I think, one of the great tensions, dualities in Star Wars, that it is this adventure serial that has its mind on mythology and on sort of didactic storytelling of tackling real world issues. And I looked up the actual definition of sphere of influence in our real world and read it real quick here. In the field of international relations, a sphere of influence is a spatial region of concept division over which a state or organization has a level of cultural, economic, military, or political exclusivity. While there may be a formal alliance or other treaty obligations between the influenced and the influencer, such formal arrangements are not necessary, and the influence can often be more an example of soft power. Similarly, a formal alliance does not necessarily mean that one country lies within another sphere of influence. High levels of exclusivity have historically been associated with higher levels of conflict. So I was just really struck by, reconnecting to something I'm sure I read about in college, but that sphere of influence, on one hand, can sound like a fun pulpy title, but its place in this episode, why is this called Sphere of Influence? To me, it really is about that one group of people trying to get dominance, trying to get a sphere of influence over another people or group, whether it is explicit or whether it's this example of soft power, you know. And for me, I think, you know, the Trade Federation has specific rules and specific treaties, but they're this soft power. They're allowed to do things as a corporation that are allowing them to have power over, you know, they don't control Pandora, but they're acting like they do, you know. And their invasion of Naboo was an attempt to actually take over the planet and get Padme to sign that treaty so it's legal, so that they actually do have total control over it. So I just thought it was worth taking a moment to highlight that. The Clone Wars in particular, we're going to be getting to a couple of those episodes, is absolutely about the lightsabers and the space fantasy, and it's about the myth and the what is a hero, what is the chosen one, what is the hero's journey. But it is also really, really interested in big world, big real world political stuff.
Oh, 100%. And this is also around the time of my college career that I left to go get a job in radio, which is why sometimes so I was like, I didn't listen to that in college. So I'm glad you brought that up, because it's the double meaning there, and the truth behind it all. So good stuff.
Awesome.
Sir. Good research.
Awesome.
Good research. A plus on your paper.
Thank you. I want a Clone Wars honorary degree when we're done with this, Ken.
look, man, I got a friend in a local college here in LA, and I have jokingly talked about, hey, could you set up a Star Wars class? Joseph Scrimshaw teaches the Clone Wars. I could make that happen.
All right. Well, let's talk. We'll talk off air. Here's my last big picture theme, and I'm not sure if I actually believe it, so I wanted to run it past you and see what you think. I think it is a possibility that a large portion of this episode is devoted to the desire to show that Greedo is awful and deserved to be shot by Han Solo.
I noted later on, we could talk about in Lore Connections, but great to bring it up here. I said, this episode is literally George versus Greedo. It is the t-shirt. It is everything about it. So yes, I am there with you on it.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I watched the behind the scenes thing with Filoni. He talks about the weirdness of animating his boss. Didn't really say whether this was George's idea or other people's, like, come on, George, let's do a whole episode about your character. But it was just really amazing after the endless amount of debate about Lucas in the special editions changing it to, Greedo shot first. No, now they both shoot at the same time. And a thing that fans still reckon with, that Lucas himself is in an episode that totally paints Greedo as a bad guy. And he's like, is this an attempt to make Lucas himself say feel better about having Han kill Greedo?
I hope, first of all, I want an updated version of this where Baron Papinoid pulls out the blasters and yells McClunky, just be all full circle. But I got to wonder too, I'd love a little bit. And I think we always watch the featurettes with Filoni explaining things, and sometimes it's tremendously insightful, and sometimes he's just being cheeky and having fun. And this was a little bit more on the cheeky side, I thought. Great details about the cantina and stuff. But I would love to know that story of, did they have to like slip this past George and Way, or kind of almost get it all done and be like, hey, what do you think? Because I almost can feel either George would just laugh and be like, that's stupid, no one's going to want to watch my character. Or, okay, yeah, you know what? Fine, put me in. Like, I would love to know those conversations.
Yeah. And maybe those interviews are out there. We'll dig them up. But for now, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to get into all of the delightful moments, the action, the comedy, the canon connections, all that great stuff in just a moment.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to finish our discussion of Sphere of Influence. I'm so excited to talk about all the action and comedy moments that I am getting my syllables in front of one another. We're here to talk Sphere of Influence. Ken, did you have a favorite action moment?
Well, I did. I think the first one I listed was Ahsoka's force float of Senator Ryoshi. I love this one. I want to see this more. It's like a force power used for good, you know, not destruction. It's knowledge and defense.
Yeah.
I love that more.
No, I really loved that. It was the force sneak, right? I think part of what I loved about it is sometimes when you're watching force powers, it can look kind of effortless, like a quick push, right? Looks effortless.
Yeah.
But the way that, you know, Ahsoka herself was, you know, hanging there and keeping Ryo just totally floating, totally silent. I could feel the strain. I was like, damn, Ahsoka, good job. I felt that one in my arm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff from Ahsoka.
So more action moments for you besides the awesome Ahsoka float.
Well, I'm sticking with Ahsoka here until I feel we have the main event coming here,
yeah.
There's a great moment. She drops down between the super battle droids and she just slices them up. So there, I would still say defense and knowledge. She needs to learn how the droids fall apart. But I just love it. It is kind of a little hero's moment that I think she, Ahsoka deserves, man. She's got skills, and they're multiplying, they're electrifying, and they slice through all those droids. And I had a little fist pump.
Yeah. It's a great moment because it is really, it's sort of a shot to be impressive, right? And almost for us to see it through Ryo Chuchi's eyes of like, oh, wow, look what a trained Jedi can do. But I like that it also doesn't solve the problem. And it's like a moment where that's not going to solve the problem. And then like all those new Nemodian guards come and, you know, maybe they're overwhelming Ahsoka. But I also got the vibe of like Ahsoka's like, well, I can't just chop them to bits. and then Ryo's got to step up and actually solve the problem, you know, politically.
I think it's important to note that. I think it almost turns me into a finger wagger, but I'm just like, yeah, it's so cool. Watch the full context of everything and the Jedi don't stop there and get the whole story. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. It'll turn into me going, watch Star Wars better. And that's not what I mean.
It's a fun moment because it's not underlined in any way. And who knows, maybe they just didn't want to animate 15 more Nemodian guards or they couldn't. But it really feels like you just took apart all those battle droids. You could take the hands off of all those Nemodian guards, but she really just chooses not to.
Yeah,
that's cool. All right. I got one moment before I think we get to the main event. It is the first moment where you realize Baron Papanoida is not just wise, but prepared to defend himself, where he whips out a knife. And I'm sure it's a vibro knife because it's in Star Wars. But from my perspective, it's just a big effing knife. Yeah. And he whips it out with great dexterity and puts it to Greedo's throat. And just the image of blue George Lucas with a knife to Greedo's throat is a hell of a thing.
What was this? George is like, you caused me so much problems. I did it to myself. You caused me so many problems.
Yeah, I would kill you if Han wasn't going to do it later. So that was the only other action beat for me before we get to the big moment. So why don't you take me through your reaction to what you think the big moment is?
Look, it's family Papanoida, but I want to specifically focus on, or at least start the conversation with Chairman Pap, as I call him. The double blaster action, going to the cantina, firing like a true cowboy. He shot first and second and 10th, 9th and 15th. He's going to get the job done. And it is both wonderfully silly. It's silly. It's George Lucas and his cameo appearance blasting up the cantina. It's absolutely silly. And I love it, but I love watching it. And I love just, he is the creator. Whether on those days that he's, don't worry about it. Those days where he's like, yeah, it's mine. We know he has those on both sides. And I just love seeing it. It's really just awesome. And it's bombastic and it's bold and it's fun and silly. And it's Star Wars to me.
Yeah, it is so great on so many levels. So I mean, it works on the reflections, the big themes that we were talking about of, wisdom is necessary. You should avoid violence at all costs, but also individuals need to take action and you need to be able to defend yourself. And in this instance, a father going to save his child, all feels very justifiable, I think, from most people's perspective. So it works on these thematic levels, but then yes, it is. It is blue George Lucas having a bar fight in a tavern. It's the table flip for cover, yeah. And then the pop out, right? Like the only way it could have been heightened is if he had done a slow-mo leap while also firing double blasters, right? I mean, this is just like, yep. Total Hot Fuzz Bad Boys 2. This is just so like over the top action. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I got to tell you, this is the episode of Data Bank Brawl we didn't need to do because it was already done.
Yes. Yeah, I think we did an episode probably. I don't even remember anymore. So, yeah, it's great that Chairman Baron Papanoida is blasting up the place with two blasters. But then the family joins in, right? And it's a real like the family that blasts together stays together. Everybody's blasting, including that, last shot from the daughter.
Yeah, yeah, right. Amanda, right? In real life?
Yes, I think so. The actual character is, Chi Amanwe. So Amanda, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. Right. Yeah, that's her name. Yeah.
I think in the action figure pack I looked up, she plays a character, Tyr Tenniel, I believe. But that's anyway, great. In the great. Context of the scene, it is the Papanoida family blasting things all up. Any other thoughts on that? Any other action moments?
No, other than again, it's just the full spectrum of purpose and point in this story of again going back to the theme, politics and action, standing up for what's right, and sometimes that means some downright fun pew 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 action, but always keep the big picture in mind.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So let's move on then to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness.
So I got to admit, I think there's a lot through this episode. Love to hear what you got. I wrote one big one. And it's Anakin going, well, that blockade wasn't all that bad. I'm like, shut up, Annie. Just what are you doing? Like, Padme should just walk away. From you,
basically his implication that like the horrible blockade and invasion of your home was our meet cute.
yeah, it's like I get it, but I was like, Anakin, come on, totally, anyways, sorry, I love it. It was fun. I mean, I literally love the moment, but it made me, it's a little, again, rewatching Attack of the Clones, there's so many times where, and I think it's somewhat intentional, but just sometimes with Anakin, you're like, oh, Anakin, no, don't say that.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree. I'm going to interject quickly because while we were talking, I was looking up Amanda Lucas, and like, yes, she plays a character, Tyr Tenniel, in Revenge of the Sith, but then it also says that she was indeed the inspiration for Che Amanwe Papanoida, and that she has since gone on to participate in mixed martial arts.
Yes, yes, she's an MMA fighter. Yes, it's look at that family doing
okay.
Things.
Good. So that really makes sense that she fired the last shot in the cantina. All right. So moments of comedy and whimsy. What else you got?
I failed to write down any more because I think the whole cantina fight is whimsy. I think the interaction with Greedo and just. I love the recontextualizing Greedo. This goes to the deleted stuff from Phantom Menace of just, he is a, you know, a Rodian son of Tatooine who just can't get a win. And again, I'm not saying that with sympathy for him. You know, he continues to, you know, confound his problems and make worse mistakes over and over again, including some of the great stuff in the, from a certain point of view, cantina stuff, in that book, if you haven't read it, check it out. So I just love the overall, just kind of, weirdness of the pathetic nature of Greedo.
Yes, we will. We'll revisit that when we get to the canon discussion there for me. Couple of moments of comedy and weirdness. I love the use of the goatal species that are just straight up goat people. They always have the weird goat voices, like they're in Three Billy Goats Gruff. But I really liked early on when the Godel bounty hunter was working with Greedo to kidnap the Papanoida sisters. The Godel cackling in the dark was kind of scary, but also really funny when I just heard the.
With the Godels, am I saying that right? The Godels. Anytime I get on my, I don't like Jackson high horse, it's a character like this that I'm like, you know, maybe Jackson really does belong. Kevin Scott.
Yep. Animal people everywhere in Star Wars. I did like, and I think this was maybe a little bit of pushback to Anakin's weird meet cute moment when Anakin's talking about he's going to cover for Ahsoka. She goes off to investigate without the council's knowledge or approval. And Padme says to Anakin, I still can't believe they let you teach.
Good pull.
It is a very good one. Another one that made me laugh is when Baron Papanoida is entering Jabba's palace, he says, we'll have to get a feel for the crowd.
Tough crowd there.
And it's like, yeah, I think that's going to happen pretty quick, Baron. It bears out, right, that he knows who to talk to and what to whisper in their ear.
In read a room. I once did stand up in a Corona biker bar, and yeah, I said the same thing as we walked in. It didn't turn out as well for me.
Yes, I did one open mic in the valley where I needed to leave quickly. These things happen. Last one for me is the cantina bartender. I love that beat where they grab the bottle and duck, like before the it's before the violence starts. But that bartender knows, oh boy, this is going to be a rough afternoon.
Not again.
Yeah, great moment. So let's get on to canon and lore and connections to other stories. What did you have here? There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, much to list. We can maybe come back to Lucas versus Greedo. We've already touched upon it, but I couldn't stop laughing at just that. It's just the overall picture of, well, George, we're going to put your character into Star Wars, and we're going to face him off against Greedo. Like, oh, guys, you're fired. Love it. But also, I got to tell you, the appearance of Rada, Stinky, Punky Muffin. Is that it?
Yeah.
I kind of like it. And we've talked about the Jabba and Jabba being a kind of a popular character in his own right. A little bit of the cult of Jabba sometimes springs up around this criminal underworld gangster. But I'm fascinated too, and I have some Rada questions going forward in Star Wars canon. I want to know where Rada is, but I just love seeing him there, and appealing to that side of Jabba is interesting, and it worked for me in a way in this episode.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed seeing Rada because it was canon continuity, but it was also making that point, making that connection, and you know, this could not have been planned at the time, but it's a little bit of retroactive connection that it was fun. There's something very Grogu-like about the way Rada doesn't want anything but to eat that bug.
Yes, yes.
I was like, why is this familiar? Oh, it's Grogu. So that was very fun to see old Punky Muffin, Stinky. Yeah, so some of the stuff is just so straightforward. Baron Papanoida and Chi Ekwe, who were literally in Revenge of the Sith, the setup being very similar to Phantom Menace, I think, really, we talked a lot about and has a point. Yeah. Lot Dodd at one point cites the Commerce Treaty of 1647, and it was weird to hear a real, like, Earth sound in ear in Star Wars.
Yeah.
But also just great backstory that, like, they do have lots of different rules that have probably been amended and loopholed to get the Trade Federation where it is. Mm. I also really appreciated the clarity from this episode about the Trade Federation, because I think it can get kind of muddled, right? Because we just see, like, oh, in the prequel films in particular, like the Trade Federation, and they have these kind of droids and these kind of weapons, and they're clearly involved with the Separatists.
Bad guys.
But that was really great to get this straightforward. The Trade Federation claims to be neutral, but continues explicitly doing business with the Separatists, and Newt Gunray himself is a known Separatist leader.
And they still try to lie.
They still try to lie. And I love, that Lot Dodd, that's kind of the victory of Lot Dodd has to spin it of, like, it's so sad that the tentacles of Newt Gunray are still showing up in our giant corporation.
Yeah.
What a tragedy that no one could have foreseen. You mentioned this one, a kidnapping is a matter for local police, not the Jedi, says Anakin. And we kind of talked about it a little bit from as Anakin's perspective, that the Jedi are higher, meant for more. But that was really interesting to me, going back to Ahsoka's arc in the final season of Clone Wars with the sisters. The Martez sisters.
Yeah.
That at some point, their perception is at some point, Jedi helped out more on Coruscant. Those are the people right there who need help. There's a lot of poverty. There's a lot of crime. And it was interesting to hear this attitude that, like, it's not just the war, that it's like, that's not our problem, you know? And just interesting to hear Anakin say that and know that Ahsoka is really going to come to see, like, oh, that's the wrong way to think. You know, when I see somebody in front of me who needs help, I help them. That's my thing.
Stop them. Yeah. That's great. Pull.
Awesome. How did you feel about seeing this device that can scan blood and come up with a trace, with an not necessarily a trace, but with an identity?
It is the updated Schick razor that Qui-Gon had, right? and I love, and it would, and to me, again, a little bit of meta justice for George to have it. Look, all you need is a scan thing. The answer's in the blood. I got it. I did like that. I kind of want to get one of those.
Yeah. And for me, it was, you know, you're just kind of watching an episode, and I think sometimes Star Wars, with its on its tech side, you know, can be a little hand wavy. I know there are people who, you know, memorize what Star Wars has laid down with techs and tech stuff and great manuals about how specific things work. But for me, sometimes when I'm watching an episode, it can just be like, oh yeah, they have a device that works like that. But this one was like, oh, maybe that has a connection to tracking fobs.
Oh, there you go.
This kind of tech. Oh, whose blood is this? Oh, Greedo.
Yeah.
A couple more for me. I've always loved the design of the Nemodian guards, who we, I believe, have an action figure in the Revenge of the Sith line, but then just you kind of got to work to see them. It was great to see them in their full glory.
They're very sturdy cats, man. They're everything about their gear, because the Nemodians, you generally think of tall and slender, I would think, based on a lot of the designs of Phantom
Menace. The hats.
It's the hats, yes, indeed. And these guys are they're not bulky. They got a big presence to them. I've always kind of been curious about them. So to see them in action, so to speak, in this episode, great pull.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Awesome. Couple more for me. It was nice to see Chance Cubes, and it was nice to see Embo.
Those are the last two things I wrote. Chance Cubes and Embo and Sugi, I believe, is in the background too. According to, I didn't see her, but the notes I saw said she's there. But Embo for sure.
Okay, cool. So let's talk a little bit, just a little bit of Greedo and just the Tatooine of it all, right? It's so much Tatooine. Mm-hmm. Not just being in Jabba's palace, but also being in the cantina. I know you were saying that you kind of like this picture of Greedo as just this sad sack bounty hunter who can just really never make their bones, really never make an impression. I kind of like that, too, because, you know, his tactics in A New Hope seem not great. Yeah. And that he it's, you know, forget morality of who shot first or shot at the same time. It's a pretty dumb way to try to corner Han Solo and then threaten him and tell him elaborately exactly why you were going to shoot him and when. It's never made Greedo seem like the sharpest bounty hunter in the bunch, right? So I kind of like that it is. This is making him seem like he is really trying to make an impression, and he can't.
He constantly can. Again, there's a point where the sympathy does stop for me and Greedo, a little bit of a lesson of, you know, you just keep making it bad, and again, your choices kind of guide you forward. But yeah, there's something you said about, I love the, yeah, Greedo the bad tag, he's so, it's careless hubris. maybe all hubris is careless, but for Greedo, it's just like, he's just so, I've got this win today, and he keeps losing. So it's its own, it's tragic comedy in a way. And just to see it here, the Phantom Menace deleted scene is a little on the nose for me. I'm glad maybe it didn't make the final cut, but it kind of exists. It's kind of there in the kind of maybe canon adjacent, treated by canon.
I think it's in the novelization. You've read it more recently than I have.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, yeah. It's there, and again, it's on the nose, and it's fun. But I like it, and I like just this dusty son of Tatooine, or again, Rodian son of Tatooine. It's sad, man. It's sad.
Yeah.
He's so when they bring him into the bar, and they're holding Greedo kind of hostage in a way to get their way, and he's just got a look on his face. It's that eyes, you know, when you see how great his eyes are, he's just. You know, he's so defeated.
Yeah, you really get the impression that, you know, he was really trying to impress people with this job. And now he's, you know, this blue politician has got the drop on him.
Yeah.
And he's afraid, you know, the cooler bounty hunters are going to find out. And just, yeah, there's a lot of shame in those big, beautiful eyes of Greedo.
Yeah, Dengar's going to just make fun of me.
How did you feel that so much of this episode was Tatooine? There is, a lot of discussion across generations now about spending too much time revisiting locations, and in particular, spending too much time revisiting Tatooine, and in particular, spending too much time revisiting these specific locations, which we've just now revisited both of them in The Mandalorian.
I come somewhere in the middle. I get it. I get you want something new. I get the joke of another sand planet in Star Wars, but I don't have a problem with that. I think when it's on a case by case basis, when it's handled right, I think it's fun to go back there. Fun with a capital F, man. Like, it's okay to have that, and it's okay to go fun and have some fun. And I do like, even though that fifth episode of season one of Mando isn't my favorite, I don't have a problem with revisiting and seeing Tatooine years later, seeing how the streets are a little empty, seeing a droid run in the bar, seeing all that stuff. And I don't mind going back and checking in and seeing these worlds that inspired us as kids, you know, because I used to go to the beach and pretend I was on Tatooine. So I don't mind going back. And it is kind of something that's central to Star Wars, Tatooine.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the idea that, yeah, this is a remote planet in terms of it is not a part of the Republic. But the Clone Wars, particularly starting with the movie, really established, no, Jabba's already in power, and he is a big crime lord. Like, obviously, he was already in power to be, you know, lording over the Boon to Eve and napping there in his box. But I think they established so strong that Tatooine is known and relevant because of this extremely powerful crime lord in his location there. So revisiting Jabba's palace because Jabba himself is a player, and that he's going to have sad sack Rodians trying to impress him and hiding out there like Greedo. That makes sense to me. And then for Chalmers, like, yeah, it's there's the revisiting it of it does have an element of meta because it is one of the great locations of Star Wars. It's, you know, one of the locations that made Star Wars what it is, I think. I understand the desire generation after generation to revisit it. But if characters are also already on Tatooine, and in particular on Mos Eisley, or a character like Greedo, who's known to be like, this is my local. This is where I go to drink and make bad decisions. It makes sense for me to revisit in story, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's fun. That cantina inspires a lot in us fans. That's why, you know, we get the scum and villainy bar here in L.A. That's generally designed to try to capture that spirit. And when we go to Galaxy's Edge, even though it's a different location, different bar, we still want to capture that spirit. You and I have done the bar crawl in Star Wars on an episode here. Bars in Star Wars have a key place, not because of the drinking, but because you and I have always talked. It is that community, good and bad. And I love exploring Star Wars, and that's the number one location.
Yeah, that's where things happen. So to bring us home here on our canon discussion, who do you think for you is the worst bounty hunter in terms of just skill at the profession? Is it Greedo or is it Toro Calican?
Oh, Toro definitely will get my vote, but probably for different reasons. Greedo gets a lot of chances. That's the thing. So maybe he's done something right somewhere. If he's a little more charismatic, he'd be the star of his own show. You know, we're rooting for Greedo to get a win. But yeah, I mean, Toro, God bless him.
Yeah, look, Greedo survived a lot longer and he's got better eyes. So I got to give my vote to Greedo. All right, let's move on then. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in this episode?
No, I think if you are okay with some of the meta-ness of this episode, of watching George in blueface run around in his cameo robe, I think you're going to be okay with this episode. And I don't think I ever haven't been on board for this episode. Sometimes I can look at my past and be like, was I too cynical or angry as a Star Wars fan for these kind of quote silly things? And I kind of always enjoyed them. So I'm there for it. But I know some people listening, maybe this isn't the episode for them. And I understand.
Yeah. I think for me, I enjoy how the episode for me holds together in terms of its big themes, its big ideas. It's got fun moments. It looks great, all those things. And I think I just appreciate, I definitely questioned as I was watching, is this too bonkers? But I think I ultimately appreciate that, you know, you could have a conversation with a fan of the original trilogy and go, did you know there's an episode of Clone Wars where George Lucas's cameo from Revenge of the Sith is the main character? And then there's also an episode where you go to Jabba's palace and the cantina, and then Greedo is the main bad guy. And then did you know they're all the same episode?
Yeah.
That somebody would go, what? How does that work? But I think it does.
It does. Yeah. I think it does.
And I wrote down this thing that I questioned, and then I watched the behind the scenes with Filoni. I had written down that I would have loved to see Chalmers maybe hopping a bit more, a few more people in there, and I would have loved to see a young Wu Hare. So then I watched the behind the scenes where Filoni talks about the challenges of making the cantina look really full, and that they liked the idea that it was owned by different people.
Yeah, and this may be the impetus to sell. It was kind of funny.
It's a funny joke, and clearly sticking with that idea of it doesn't stay in anybody's hands too long.
Yeah, and Chalmers a Wookiee, right?
Yes, that's my recollection of the legends. Yeah. I don't know if that's been refreshed in modern canon.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. No, I like that little note.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe Chalmers the landlord. Maybe he owns the building.
Yeah.
Different people buy the business of the cantina. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? We'll get a full episode about that, I'm sure, in Mandalorian season 3. But I'll stick with my something I disliked your question. I would have loved to see animated younger Wu Hare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. He can work there. Work his way up. The boss changes. He sticks around. That happens. I've been through a company switch, but stayed at the same spot. You know?
Absolutely. He should have been. Yeah. The kid, the fresh faced waiter.
Yes. Just starting out.
With so much to look forward to, you know, and he could have repeated his line. No blasters. Come on. Classic.
Yes.
All right. Anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I just have one question. I am happy to hear your answer. Are the Nemodians the most loathed species in the galaxy?
I think they must be, right? I mean,
nobody likes them,
right? I mean, this is like one of those fun Star Wars things where, like, I would almost like what Mandalorian has been doing for some ideas in Star Wars of, like, let's look at it from a different viewpoint. Yeah. I would love to meet a Nemodian bounty hunter, or kind of fun rogue, or charming drunk, or a Nemodian who is in rebellion. You know, because the Nemodians we've seen, we've got some of those guards look pretty stand up, but the rest of the Nemodians we've met are just kind of a greedy and duplicitous, yeah. Right?
Yeah, like I'm sure. The people of Cato Nemodia, like, rise up, stand up. You know, I had that thought too of some sort of little redemption song is coming down the line. I told the Trade Federation itself, I can get behind them being everything you described and the villains of a lot of the stories. Yeah, but I was just thinking of that in this episode of just like, man, damn, they don't ever get a ray of sunshine over there.
Yeah. For me, just a couple of quick things. I really like the weird Pantoran ship. It's like this steel gray with the gold highlights, and just really absolutely no way it should be able to stand up when it lands. Just
right.
It has just a big, two big middle fingers to physics from that ship, which I really like seeing in Star Wars. I also just like the behind the scenes detail that Corey Burton, who voiced Papanoida, was doing a little bit of an Orson Welles impression. Which is that's a hell of a thing, because, you know, Orson Welles, great actor, you know, amazing voice, but also famously tortured director who had endless battles with studios ruining his films. That's a very interesting choice for George Lucas.
Yeah. Well, and also because you could have easily done, like, I love a good Lorne Michaels impression. I get it. But like anyone who worked with him that also then turns him into a villain, you know, it doesn't always work for me. I love Mark McKinney's version of Brain Candy, perhaps the best, but you could have done a George, right? You could have done a George impersonation, and I'm glad they went this way, and very thoughtful decision from Corey Burton.
Yeah, the regal, strong voice was really, really good. Last thing for me is I do kind of love that his son, Papanoida's son, voiced by Seth Green, is that his name is Ion.
Ion, yeah.
It's not Ian. It's Ion. It's just straight up, Ion. You know, like the canon, my son.
Yeah. That's great. And it look the design, obviously, very much jet. That's great.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. So if you could have, Ken, a character or an action figure or any sort of toy of any character from this episode, who would you want?
And I mentioned earlier, I'd take the little Papanoida blood decoder there. But in all seriousness, and we do have George figures in Star Wars and the family Lucas figures in Star Wars, but I would love just a good old 6-inch Chairman Baron Papanoida. Just all detail, regal, double blasters. Let's do it.
Absolutely. That's the one I thought of, too, I think partially because, like, you know, that 6-inch Black Series Jar Jar Binks with all of his weapons is a sort of like, you know, this triumph of Jar Jar. You almost want that for, like, not the Papanoida from the film, the Papanoida from the Clone Wars with the double blasters.
Totally,
yeah.
Totally.
The other one that I would love is Greedo with his different jacket. I like that Greedo has his much more calm, not as colorful jacket. That would be a cool 3¾ action figure for me. Greedo with different jacket. All right. Next up is going to be really fun, really different, I think, for us to talk about, Ken, because it is a trilogy of episodes that deals with the escape and the fate of Zero the Hutt. But we really got to bounce around to have this make sense in chronological order. This is one of the arcs that truly, truly, deeply confused me the first time I watched through it.
Right.
We're going to be watching Season 3, Episode 8, Evil Plans. Then Season 1, Episode 22, Hostage Crisis. Then Season 3, Episode 9, Hunt for Zero. And each of these episodes I really like and have some really interesting individual stories to talk about, but I'm also really interested to watch them all together and see the what the whole story of the tragedy of Zero the Hutt is.
I'm excited to do this. I have never watched these three episodes in that order. I've never watched it. And doing some research for my book on Cad Bane, I did kind of watch a lot of the CAD stuff maybe in order, but I've never sat down and watched these three back to back. I'm excited to do this.
Yeah, there's some great stuff in these episodes, and I'm so curious to see how it all hangs together when telling the story of Zero. So that is what you should be watching if you want to be all caught up with us for our next episode. But for now, Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
It's pretty simple. When recording your podcast in a bar, bring both of your blasters.
Always. Do you have anything to plug? Wait, I got to draw my blasters. excellent, excellent moral. Do you want to tell people where they can find us?
I would love to. We are the Force Center Podcast, and we can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Check out an interview just did with Jamie Stangroom. It was a Spotlight Star Wars interview, but we also put it up on YouTube with our faces. And I know a lot of you love seeing our faces, and you can see me and Jamie on there. Check out Jamie's stuff on Lightspeed Tonight. A lot of fun stuff there. But you can also like us on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. If you want an audiobook on us, go to audibletrial.com/Force Center. Get some merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And don't forget to check out us on a lot of different formats, including Amazon Music or Spotify, if you're looking for that. And then you can support us directly. Two spots, actually. You can go to Anchor, and they do allow you to support the podcast directly there. We appreciate that. Or you can go to patreon.com/Force Center. We appreciate what you do there to make a lot of our dreams come true, including the great theme music we often bring in Tony Thaxton for. I think all the shows are covered by Tony now. Maybe we'll have to see where we need. And then you can follow me at Ken Napzak or go to kennapzak.com. Joseph.
Excellent. Yeah, all great stuff. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures. And if you've got HBO Max and you're looking for something to check out, you can watch both seasons of the Adult Swim show that I'm a writer for. It's a weird adult comedy fantasy show called Tig Tone. So check that out if you're interested. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Chairman Baron Papanoida, and both of his blasters, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.